Proceed to the sixth case, Twisdale versus O'Neill. Or Snow.
Throw the case out.
Mr. Sutherland.
Good afternoon.
If it pleases the court, I'm representing Mr. Jim Twisdale in this argument. Mr. Jim Twisdale was the victim of retaliation in a hostile work environment. This is a rather unusual
case. What was he retaliated against for? What did he do that what's the retaliation for?
The characterization that this was a race issue was established when Barry Madison filed an EEOC request for a counseling memorandum implicating her immediate supervisor and Mr. Twisdale. Then later in February 10, 1998, an actual formal EEOC complaint was filed in which she alleged race and gender discrimination. And based upon the deposition of Mr. Jim Rogers, the director, it implicated Mr. Jim Twisdale. The history that precedes that suggests that race was a motivation.
I don't understand you. What did Twisdale do for which you say he's being retaliated against?
He did several.
Ordinarily in these cases, someone files a complaint with the EEOC, and that provokes retaliatory acts. So what is it that Twisdale did that provoked the retaliation?
Mr. Twisdale did file 5 EEOC charges, the first one in July of 1998, and 4 grievances, agency grievances. But the first thing he did.
Are those what the retaliation is for, because he filed those things?
Well, we're not clear about that, Judge, because it overlaps.
Can you tell me what is it he did that provoked the retaliation?
The first thing he did was review an evaluation performance of Barry Madison, which was done by her immediate supervisor, and ratified those appraisal ratings, I think, of 3s. She immediately requested.
So wait a second. So he was retaliated against for ratifying certain appraisals?
Appraisals that were, instead of appealed, were alleged to be based upon race and gender discrimination by Barry Madison.
But how does I didn't understand that. How does retaliation for that, how is that retaliation within the meaning of Title VII?
I'm getting to that, Judge. That's the first event that occurred.
I don't want a chronology of events. I want you to tell me as simply as you can, what is the act that Twisdale did which caused the retaliation against him?
His job was to review the evaluations, and he was implicated. He was accused of.
Well, we don't usually think of retaliation as being a remedy for someone who's accused of discrimination. We think of retaliation as the remedy for someone who has complained or he's testified for someone who's been discriminated against. And that's what he's retaliated against, not retaliation for discriminating.
I understand what you're saying, Judge, and I'm about to give you, instead of a chronology, the next event. If you take these collectively, if you divide them up and dissect them, then it's pretty hard to see this as a total collage of events. The first event was, as I say, Ms. Barry Madison complaining that her evaluation.
Yes, but that can't be retaliation against Twisdale because Twisdale is complaining about discrimination or is assisting a person who is complaining about discrimination, can it be?
Well, what Mr. Twisdale did was attempt to negotiate a settlement with the EEOC regarding her allegations that discrimination was a motivating factor.
Was he helping her? Is that the idea?
He was helping both her and the IRS.
Well, forget the IRS. He's helping her, and so are you saying he's retaliated against because he was helping a victim of discrimination?
He was removed from that process.
You won't answer me yes or no, I take it.
Yes, I will answer you. I've answered you yes, he was retaliated against by the substance.
For what? For helping someone who was a victim of discrimination?
No, Your Honor, he was helping the process.
Well, do you have any cases where someone who was retaliated against, not for helping an individual accused of discrimination, but for helping a process, has been held to be within the protection of the Title VII.
Your Honor, I've not found any case exactly on that point. What I have found is that when witnesses come forward in support or are thought to be supportive of a issue under Title VII, they can be the victim of retaliation in a hostile environment.
What if he had testified against her and was fired for testifying against her? Would he be able to claim retaliation?
I think he could. If the charges that she brought were false in his mind or were spurious, and he was trying to demonstrate that she was simply building on a social relationship with Mr. Jim Rogers, who was the director, who happened to be African-American, and Barry Madison was African-American.
Seems so odd. I mean, someone complains against her employer of discrimination, and this person tries to help the employer to settle or get rid of the case, and then is fired. Why would the company fire him for trying to help the company?
He was not fired, as the court knows.
Well, I know. I'm sorry.
But
that's a separate
later,
issue.
But why
was there adverse action taken against him?
While that EEOC issue was proceeding, Mr. Rogers, who's five levels above Ms. Barry Madison, intercedes and insists that all of the evaluations be immediately made fours instead of threes without any background investigation, contrary to ordinary business practices and common sense and fairness. It undermined not only the immediate supervisor, but it undermined Mr. Tweesdale's opportunity to be independent and objective in evaluating and supervising.
My question. Why was there retaliation against Tweesdale for trying to help the company? Trying to help the IRS, the employer?
Because the allegation could have been spurious, and he was trying to support the process. He wasn't supporting necessarily.
But why would the IRS retaliate against someone who's trying to help the IRS to resolve a problem?
That's what retaliation is, when it doesn't
No,
fit.
Retaliation in every case I've seen is retaliation for helping a victim of discrimination, not for helping the employer. Employers don't usually fire people because the people are helping the employer against an employee charging discrimination. That's what's so puzzling about this case.
While this thing was being processed, Judge Posner, then there was a directive given to Mr. Tweesdale to investigate allegations of dishonesty and unethical conduct. On the very day that he then contacts and has an interview with Ms. Barry Madison, she leaves the interview, goes directly to Mr. Rogers.
What is it that he did that made the IRS unhappy with him and commit these adverse actions that you complained about?
It wasn't the IRS, it was the director, and it was Mary Murphy that were retaliating.
All right, what did he do that made her angry with him?
He was investigating an allegation of an African-American that she lied to a General Services employee to secure a parking permit, that she lied to an assistant U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Indiana when he was requesting documents, and she lied about her ability to produce those documents. Those were confirmed, and when he writes the memorandum confirming
but
this
could
and give
you
her
answer my question?
I think this is an answer.
It's and so long-winded. What is it that he did? Can't you just say something like this, that the retaliation was for refusing to support a claim of discrimination?
We did say that.
Is that correct? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes.
Okay, so a supervisor who's siding with the victim of discrimination punishes him because he didn't support the discrimination charge.
The director punishes him because he does not support the allegation of discrimination. And not only that, but punishes him further when he concludes that that very employee lied to obtain a parking permit and lied to an assistant U.S. attorney. And then furthermore, when the counseling memorandum was placed in her file, she appeals that, and without any investigation or any explanation, Mary Murphy removes the counseling memorandum and constantly undermines his position. We've outlined a number of things that happened, which we think on the aggregate.
See, people generally, one's general reaction to the retaliation provision of Title VII is that it's meant to support people who file discrimination claims rather than to support people who contest those claims. That's you understand. It's a peculiarity in your.
Well, this is not the typical case, Your Honor. I've handled many typical cases, and this is not the typical case. But and I'm running out of time, and I want to save my time for rebuttal. But what he was doing was his job, and each time he did his job, he was subjected to inappropriate audits and interviews, removal of two program functions, which reduced his operation by 50%, all occurring within 7 months. No explanation, no justification. We believe that that conduct demonstrates retaliation for his challenging this relationship which Mrs. Barry Madison had with Mr. Rogers and Ms. Murphy. Like to
thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Mr. Hanlon?
May it please the Court, James Hanlon on behalf of the Secretary of the United States Department of the Treasury. I would like to first address one question raised by the Court and follow up on a couple of Mr. Sutherland's comments. First of all, with respect to the Barry Madison evaluation, which has been discussed, Mr. Sutherland talked about.
Well, you seem to concede that it doesn't matter whether for retaliation, it doesn't matter whether the retaliation is for making a charge or assisting the person who made the charge or opposing the person who made the charge. Is that correct?
That was an argument which was raised before the district court on summary judgment proceedings. That was not an argument that the district court incorporated into its order disposing of the Secretary's summary judgment brief. For that reason, the Secretary chose to limit the written arguments in its brief and discussed on appeal, focusing upon those that were contained in the district court's order.
Okay.
And the Barry Madison evaluation, what the record would show was that Mr. Damron, who was the acting chief of the examinations division of the IRS. So this is an individual who is much higher in the organizational chart than Mr. Tweesdale is. The chief of his division is the person who took over the handling of the EEO complaint. And ultimately, it was his proposed way of resolving that was affirmed by District Director Rogers. There's no evidence in the record Mr. Rogers, who's African-American, ever became directly involved in the resolution of the complaint. The evidence in the record reflects that Mr. Damron, who is a Caucasian and who has supervisory authority over Mr. Tweesdale, is the individual who came up with the proposed resolution. One other point raised has to do with this other memorandum that Ms. Madison filed taking issue with some performance evaluations. This indeed was removed from her file by Mary Murphy, who is African American. Mary Murphy came in and replaced Mr. Damron as the chief of the examinations division. The record in this case shows that the reason Ms. Murphy chose to remove that memorandum was because that was a result of discussions she'd had with labor relations, and that was a mechanism that she saw fit within her managerial authority and discretion to resolve the complaint. The record does not show that she whimsically, for no basis whatsoever, said, oh, I'm going to go remove this memo out of Barry Madison's file because I feel like it. She rather methodically addressed it with labor relations and thought that that was an appropriate means to resolve the complaint. The record further reflects that most of these incidents involving Barry Madison and Mr. Tweesdale had already taken place before Mary Murphy arrived at the Indiana District Office and became the chief of the examinations division. Most importantly, the most salient point which I'd like to raise for the court is in follow-up to something that Mr. Sutherland represented, which concerned, which goes to the issue of adverse employment action as well as the issue of hostile work environment. The court's analysis of these two issues are somewhat intertwined since it is possible for a hostile work environment in itself to constitute an adverse employment action. On appeal, Mr. Tweesdale asserts that he identifies two programs or functions which, because they were transferred out from under his authority, that constituted an adverse employment action and or a hostile environment. The two programs he identifies are the Disclosure Office as well as the Problem Resolution Program. Now, what's important when addressing these is, first of all, these are collateral functions to which Mr. Tweesdale was assigned. The record clearly shows, and this is based on Mr. Tweesdale's own admissions, representations, both contained in his deposition and his EEO complaint, the record shows that his main job as chief of the quality management branch of the examinations division was to review and ensure the quality and the technical accuracy of the written work product being put out by revenue agents and auditors who worked in the examinations division. That is the core of the function of his job. That's why he was a GS-14. The Problem Resolution Program and the Disclosure Office are two discrete functions, neither one of which has anything to do with the core function of ensuring the quality of the written work product put out by the examinations division. These two functions, the Disclosure Office, what it relates to is how the IRS district office responds to third-party inquiries and requests for information. And there are approximately three employees in the district who handled that. And this is a function which relates to the entire district, not only the quality management branch, not only the examinations division, but the entire branch, which is comprised of six divisions. When Ms. Murphy arrived in the district, it happened to be located within Mr. Tweesdale's second-level management authority. The Program Resolution Branch, Problem Resolution Program, excuse me, is also a district-wide program. There were a couple caseworkers assigned to the quality measurement branch. Now, both of these programs, admittedly, were ultimately removed, or I should say transferred, from Mr. Tweesdale's second-level management. What's important about that, for one, is that Mr. Tweesdale never had direct supervisory authority over either one of these collateral functions. Each one of these functions had both a person in charge of the program for the entire district, as well as a frontline manager who actually did all the day-to-day work. He was a second-level manager of these programs. And the reason why they were moved, what the record shows, is because both of these dealt with very sensitive issues relating to disclosure of taxpayer information and handling taxpayer problems, both of which were the subject of the 1998 Revenue Reform Act, which was taking place in the backdrop while all these events are going on. Most importantly, however, with respect to the transfer of these two functions, Mr. Tweesdale asserts that this constituted 50% of his job duties. There is zero support in the record for that assertion. To the contrary, and I would specifically direct the court's attention to Exhibit 50 of Defendant's Appendix of Materials submitted in support of summary judgment, as well as Exhibit P of the plaintiff's materials, what these show is that Mr. Tweesdale, based on his own admissions, was responsible for up to 25 and perhaps as high as 31 separate and discrete functions in his role as the chief of the quality management branch. These are two collateral side functions, and there is no evidence in the record to support his assertion that it was 50% or indeed that it was any percent. In his brief, Mr. Tweesdale tries to put the burden on the secretary to show what percentage of his job it was, and in response to that, we would argue that the burden is on Mr. Tweesdale, as the plaintiff in this case, to establish the adverse employment action, and thus the burden was on him to establish what percentage of his job these functions comprise. Finally, we would just like to note that the record shows Mr. Tweesdale never suffered any materially adverse employment action. He never suffered anything which interfered with the terms and conditions of his employment. And again, specifically directing the court's attention to Exhibit 50 of the secretary's materials filed in support of summary judgment, which is Mr. Tweesdale's management resume. most of the accomplishments that he cites on there are accomplishments and distinctions and awards that he received while James Rogers, who's African American, was the district director, and while Mary Murphy, who was his direct supervisor, who was African American, was the chief of the examinations division. It was while these two individuals were in charge of, while Mr. Rogers was in charge of the office, Ms. Murphy had authority over him, that he accomplished most of the significant things that led to his further advancement. His performance evaluations remained the same after Mr. Rogers and Ms. Murphy arrived as they were beforehand for the preceding 3 years. He received the highest performance bonuses of his career, and he ultimately received a promotion to a GS-15 job. Mr. Rogers actively supported him to get that job, and Ms. Murphy was also instrumental with that fact. I see that I am out of time, and if there are no further questions from the court, the secretary would request respectfully that this court affirm the grant of summary judgment entered by the district court below. Thank you very much.
All right. Mr. Sutherland, your time has expired, but you may have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Judge.
I'd like to address a couple points that Mr. Hamlin brought up on behalf of the IRS. The memo, the counseling memo that was removed from Barry Madison was a counseling memo not on performance but on lying. It specifically addressed her inability to tell the truth on three specific occasions and counseled her that if it happened in the future that there could be more serious consequences. The second thing I would like to address is that Mr. Tweesdale did say that his managerial responsibilities were significantly diminished without explanation. There had been a review of his office in October of 1997, which was superlative. Without warning, without explanation, Mr. Rogers orders a second review. And then within a month of that, in April, a third review is now ordered of the problem resolution program. Both of those programs were removed without any clear explanation. What is, I think, telling is that from Mr. Tweesdale's point of view, he was stymied, he was stuck. The reason he got some of these compliments is because he had so little to do, he was volunteering to travel and participate in other committees. It wasn't that Mr. Rogers helped him get the job, is that he had filed 5 EEO complaints and 4 grievances that were still pending, and he was not going to stop until he had been transferred. He had asked for a number of transfers within the IRS and a number of transfers without, and they did not happen. What did happen is he filed his complaint in April of 2000, and by August of 2000, his requests for transfer are finally granted, and he's transferred at some considerable inconvenience to West Virginia. He has to uproot his family, that where he's been established for about 4 years. He has to take his kids out of the school and put them in a new school system. We believe that if you look at the totality, as opposed to chopping it up in separate, distinct acts, that he has been the victim of retaliation in a hostile work environment by the controlling case law in this circuit and the Supreme Court.
Thank you, Mr. Sutherland. Thank you, Mr. Hamlin. The case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.